Yeah, Lutovach, maybe this week with the Olam Zrishus, we'll talk about, again, we're continuing meanwhile in our theme of what we've been calling Sugyos in Tanakh. Now I want to focus on, move over to another period. I don't even know if we'll get to the birth of Shmuel HaNavi, but the background of the birth of Shmuel HaNavi. That's what I would like to talk about now, both in terms of the, so to speak, the personal angle of it and the national angle of it. And to spend a little time both on the significance of the process, the environment in which Shmuel was born, and his father and his mother. And this will also touch on understanding the essence of what Nevuah itself is. Okay. So everyone's familiar in a general way with the story of Shmuel HaNavi's birth, Chanan and childlessness. I want to take a step back and approach it from a little bit of a broader, more national perspective, if we'll put it that way. Shmuel was born toward the end of the period of the Shoftim. In fact, we know that he was the last Shofet. What was happening at that period? What was happening at that period was the period of the Shoftim was starting to exhaust itself. The period of the Shoftim had been for, if I remember correctly, approximately 400 years. And we should spend some time talking about the period of the Shoftim in general, maybe some specifics in the period of the Shoftim. But the period of the Shoftim was a period where the Jewish people were had what we'll call self-government, meaning there wasn't a centralized organized government. There wasn't a centralized organized army. It was, as Shmuel HaLavi told them later, Hashem hu malkechem. They were living with the reality of Hashem was the direct monarch, and the country functioned in that kind of way. It's an amazing thing. People, again, there's often the need to get beyond the superficial impression of a certain tkufa. We've spoken about this. People think of it as a primitive point before they really set up a government, etc. You have to realize that a country that can't get their act together and is operating without a government in a primitive kind of way is going to implode in a very short time. Such a system can't survive for 50 years, let alone 100 years or 400 years. The period of the Shoftim actually brought out a very, very great period and element of the Jewish people, where they were able to function in a reality of Hashem hu malkechem. We don't need a more organized government, a more organized enforcement system. Hashem hu malkechem. This was a very great period. Now, yes, it had that left room for problems to arise, and they did arise, but these were isolated instances in the general picture of that whole period. That's, you have to, when you look at the Psukim in Shoftim, and it says, "Bayom imahem ein melech b'Yisrael ish hayoshev bein ov yaseh." Those days when there was no king in Klal Yisrael, everyone did what was right in their eyes. So, but Victor Miller would stress that pasuk is meant to be taken very literally. It sounds like a negative statement, but what are the literal words? It means each person lived according to what was right in his eyes. Now, they had a general, in general, they had a pretty good picture of what's right, and that was how they lived. Their understanding of what was right and their understanding of Hashem being the king was enough to hold them in place in a general way. Yes, it did give room for certain slips, but as we pointed out other times, if you actually look at the whole period, two-thirds are included in those little passing psukim that say, "Oh, and then everything was fine for 40 years." Right? Anybody's familiar with the with Shoftim? It tells about an incident, and then it says, "Vatishkoy Torah 40 shana." Then it moves on to the next incident. So when it says, "Oh, and then everything was quiet for 40 years," it means that there were no problems then. And if you actually add up the years, it's about two-thirds of the period. So we're talking about a great period in Klal Yisrael that had its challenges and at some point started exhausting itself. But you see that, right? When the Jewish people came and said, "We don't want to live like this anymore," it was actually a certain admonition against them. You finished, with this reality of Hashem hu malkechem. Now, it was going to get there at some point. It was going to get there at some point. And yes, the time was pretty much ripening. And yet, it was still held against them to an extent that they rushed it. Question.
Why did it have to get there? What was it? What is it about the system that could not carry on that way?
So, in a general way, let's just call it in a general way, Yiras HaDoros, which it's a certain just tendency. Ramchal really gives a depth behind it, but that things are going to gravitate toward the material as time goes on, more and more. Spirituality is always fighting an uphill battle. And therefore, it's expected that things will deteriorate as time goes on. And our job is to slow the process as much as we can. But we have a certain understanding, and it was already built into the Torah that the day will come when a king will have to be throned. And here, before the birth of Shmuel HaNavi, we're toward the end of the period of the Shoftim. We're in the time of Eli HaKoyen. We know that there were problems going on then, which we'll probably touch on soon more. But whatever the case is, it's nearing its end. It's nearing its end. This system won't be able to continue for a much longer time. And therefore, as always, Hashem, with his Hashgacha, is already starting to lay down the put things in place for the transition into the next period. What's this next period going to be? It's going to be moving from the period of Shoftim to Melachim, right? The period of the invention, if you will, right? The established Jewish monarchy, Jewish Melucha. Now that, anytime Melucha is established in any country, it's a very iffy kind of situation. Which direction is it going to go? What kind of nature will the Malchus have? And therefore, Hashem was already preparing you would have to have a very, very great person to be there at the, Rabbi Avigdor Miller said it, at the cradle of Melucha and Klal Yisrael, shaping it right, guiding it right, moving it onto the right track. And therefore, Hashem started preparing the appearance of this very great person. Hashem would send into this world a very great neshama to be able to handle moving Klal Yisrael into the next period. And this would be one of the greatest Nevi'im we ever had. Shmuel HaNavi is likened to Moshe and Aaron. So here, Hashem is going to select, we're going to have to plant this very great person in, and then we could move toward that transition. So here now, Hashem, Kevayochel, has to select the environment he's going to be born into and the parents he's going to have, the couple that's actually going to parent him. And here, Hashem chose the choicest package. Now, let's spend a little bit of time on these three parts, the three components: the environment and his father, Elkanah, and his mother, Chana. So, first of all, in terms of the environment, so the way the Navi starts, it starts by saying that the story of Shmuel starts. Give me a moment, I'll just pull it up. ויהי איש אחד מן העולם עשה עם צויפי מהר אפרים ושמע אלקנה בן ירוחם בן אליהו בן תויכו בן צוף אפרוסי. This was an area in Har Ephraim, but this place, Ramasayim Tzoyfim, was actually a city of Levim. It was one of the cities where Rabbi Levim lived in different pockets around Eretz Yisrael. It was actually a city of Levim. And which family of Levim? It was the family of Kahas. Kahas was the most aristocratic family of the Levim. I mean, the Shevet Levi was the most aristocratic Shevet in Klal Yisrael, the most spiritual Shevet in Klal Yisrael. And among them, Shevet Kahas was the most distinguished family in Shevet Levi. So we're talking about the select, the choicest core of Klal Yisrael.
Where did Korach come from?
What's that? Korach was a Korach Ben Yitzchak, also from Shevet Kos. That's right. That's right. That was. What's that? Also from Kos. Yeah. Okay. So now. Tzayfim. So this area already as is was already characterized by the highest quality in Klal Yisrael. We had Tzayfim. Tzayfim was the name of the area within Ramasayim where Shmuel was born. What does Tzayfim mean? So the Mefarshim say different things. One of the things that the Mefarshim say is that there were many Nevi'im there. It was an area, it was a neighborhood that was characterized by Nevi'im. Which means that this was the environment. You were growing up among Nevi'im. Now let's appreciate what that means. Here, this is, I just want to lay down in a general way. Let's understand what we're talking about when we're talking about a Navi. And if you appreciate that, you can appreciate what it means, or appreciate how we can't begin to comprehend what it means to be growing up in an environment of Nevi'im. So in order to appreciate this, I want to read how the Rambam puts it down. See, Nevuah was not just a technicality. Hashem has a message that has to be delivered to the Bnei Yisrael. So he finds the right person and delivers the message. Nevuah was actually the peak of the expression of Hashem's presence among the Bnei Yisrael. Nevuah, the way the Kuzari puts it is, was an experience of Olam Haba in this world. It was something that people strove for their whole life. And once they had such an experience, the Kuzari says, he lost his taste for anything material after that. All he wanted to know afterwards was, will I ever experience that again? Any pleasure of this world paled after you had that experience. Therefore, the Kuzari also goes on to say that the people in those days didn't fear death. There was no need for what we'll call faith in Olam Haba, because Hashem said, here's how you could connect to it. The primary way being Nevuah. Once a Navi had Nevuah, so he looked at death just like it was only a matter of I better be prepared when it comes, that's all. But he knew exactly where he was going. They had actually been there and experienced it. There was absolutely no fear. But it's not just that, but the reality of so many Nevi'im among Klal Yisrael, there were 1.2 million Nevi'im throughout the whole period. The presence of Nevi'im among Klal Yisrael just spread around this reality and awareness to everybody. Because even if you weren't a Navi, seeing a Navi, being impacted by a Navi had an extreme impact on the person. The Kuzari says that not only the Navi, but a person who saw a person while he was getting Nevuah, people moved into a different state then, right? We know they fell down, they lost their senses. That's what it looked like. But the idea was that a person was moving into a completely out-of-body experience, and anybody observing it, the intensity of what he was seeing was so powerful that the Guzari said it impacted the observer for life. And now let's just look at what it actually took to get there, the way the Rambam puts it down. So listen to this. So the Rambam says this is the beginning of Hilchos Yesodei HaTorah. It says the Nevuah will only take effect on a person who is a great Chacham in Chachma, meaning he already has to be in the level of one of the top Talmid Chachamim of the time, right? Gibor b'midoso is an absolute Gibor, meaning perfection of Midas. Lo yayitzra is gaber olav b'davar ba'olam. He's reached a place where his Yetzirah never overcomes him. He never succumbs to physical temptation. On the contrary, his seichel is so strongly developed. I'm just paraphrasing the Rambam. I'm not going to keep reading the Hebrew. That he always overcomes his yetzer, and he is a very broad and deep person. Now, a person who's accomplished all this, we're already talking about years of accomplishment. We're talking about a person who is mastered all of Torah, basically describing here. That's a years-long project. Plus, he's mastered, it's not just about accomplishing in your learning, but to have mastered your Midas is a multi-lifelong project, Right? That's Rabbi Yisrael Salanter's famous statement. It's easier to get through Shas than to really turn around the Midah. But here we're talking about a person who's accomplished both. And then it says what he says, when a person who's reached these accomplishments, when he then moves into the next level, and I can't explain exactly what he means here, I'll just kind of try to translate it, and begins moving toward those very great and abstract concepts, and he has broad enough of mind to be able to comprehend them. Okay, I guess he's talking about Kabbalah and the Siddhas, I don't know, but that's basically his words. And then he says, and he's constantly in a process of withdrawing more and more from the material parts of life, becoming more miskadesh v'hoylech, becoming more and more sanctified, removing himself, withdrawing more and more from the general public's involvement with material affairs. And he's constantly progressing and growing and bringing himself to a place where he never has an idle thought. You hear that? We're not talking about idle speech. We're talking about idle thought. His thoughts are always planned. He always knows what he's thinking about. Nothing wanders into his mind, okay? And he never has an idle thought or thoughts that just get drawn into the realm of the material. Rather, his mind is always intensely connected to the highest of realms under the Kisei HaKavod, constantly observing and contemplating the Tzuras HaKadoshas HaTaharis, those great holy and pure forms. Again, meaning he's already living in a different realm. This is before we've gotten to Nevuah, yes? And he's intensely thinking into HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Chochmah to the deepest of places. Then, Miyad Ruach HaKodesh Shor Olam. When a person gets to this place, then the Ruach of Nevuah will come upon him. So we're talking about a person who's years of accomplishment. And there were yeshivas dedicated to training people toward this. And the Ramchal adds that this is also, you had to learn the art of meditation, of contemplation, of focus. And then he says, and then when the voice actually comes on the person, so he just sees himself blending into the circles of the Malachim, meaning that's where actually where he moves. He moves into the realms that are beyond. And that's why the body just kind of falls to the wayside, right? And he becomes a transformed person, and he understands that he is no longer the person he was. He now is a different species from the rest of man and even Chacham. And so here we're describing what a Navi is. And again, we see in the Kuzari the impact of being exposed to Navi, even the people who weren't Navi. This is why the whole reality in the time of the Bais Rishon, when Naviim were prevalent, was something that's beyond our comprehension, just to even understand the experience of walking through the street, of living for a day in that reality, in that charged reality, supercharged reality, is beyond us. And this is what we're describing here. But why would we find that the Nevi'im primarily played the role of those who were giving over to Chochmah, who were admonishing? So let's break it down to two parts. The Nevi'im that we have, 48 Nevi'im, right? The recorded teachings or Nevuahs, the recorded Nevuahs of 48 Nevi'im. There were 1.2 million Nevi'im. I one time tried to make a very broad approximate cheshbon. In contemporary terms, breaking it down, trying to spread it over the generations, it came out, to my cheshbon, I don't know if it's accurate or not, it was a very, very broad kind of cheshbon, but that basically talking in our contemporary terms, it meant a Navi every couple of buildings. Every couple of buildings, there were more Navi'im than neighborhood Rabbanim. Every couple of buildings, meaning if there was Navi, if the Navi four buildings down wasn't available, you had to go another four buildings down, or maybe four buildings in the other direction. Now, the Nevuah, in essence, wasn't necessarily about Teichacha. Nevuah began with reaching a certain level that you were zoicha to the experience. It could even come without a message. We find that it says that Hashem appeared to Avram after his bris milah on the third day. Right? What did Hashem tell him then? We only see that Hashem appeared to him, and Avraham Avinu then saw the travelers coming, and he said, "Please wait." Right? But we don't see what Hashem actually said to him. The Ramban says he didn't necessarily tell him anything. It was the schar; he was rewarded with nevuah for the schar of his sacrifice of making the bris. So that is what nevuah is in essence. It was working toward a state where you a level where you can actually be directly contacted by Hashem. Now, once you came there, messages could also be given. Sometimes the message was just personal. Sometimes it was to somebody down the block. Sometimes it was for all of Klal Yisrael. The greatest of Nevi'im were given Nevuas to carry to all of Klal Yisrael. And among them, there were those who were given Nevuas that were actually necessary to be recorded for all of the generations. Those are the those are the Nevi'im that we have. The Nevi'im that we have, the way the Gemara puts it, is Nevuah shenitzrucha. Among the 1.2 million, there were 48 Nevi'im who gave over Nevuas that needed to be recorded for all of posterity. But what were the other 1.2 million minus 48? What were they doing? It was personal. What's that?
Something that's applicable to that
Oh,
to that name.
so it could have been anywhere from personal, maybe even without a message, to exactly like you're saying, relevant to the time, relevant to the neighborhood, relevant to the individual. That was how it worked in those days. A person was going through some problem. He came to the local Navi and asked him, "Can you get to the spiritual root of my problem?" And the Navi tried to access Nevuah and be able to tell the person, "Yes, in your case, your problem is, you know, Lashon Hara, your problem is the way you speak to your wife, the problem is whatever it was." But that was the that was what it, that was how it worked.
Yeah, but it wasn't the people isn't a vegetarian thing. So how did they know who if they would let they have they didn't have like who should be put up a team who should be in the board because then we get in somebody
Oh, so
but
that.
how did we know how did they know to accept whoever was giving the board at the time?
How did they know whether to accept him or not? So, I'm just trying to see if I find this in the Rambam. Minute. Okay. So, here, based on what we just discussed, it actually makes it easier because. Basically, according to everything that the Rambam just laid down, if a person suddenly appeared out of the blue and said, "I'm a Navi," and nobody knows who he is, it didn't make sense. If we understand that a person had to be reaching such levels, he would presumably already be a known person among Talmid Chacham. And this is what the Rambam says a little later on in the Perek. If we know that Nevuah had to be prefaced by 20 years, I'm saying 20 years for argument's sake, I don't know if it was 5 years, and I don't know if it was 40 years, whatever it is, years of intense involvement in Torah and in Avodah, et cetera, people are operating this way are going to be known to the people around them. But it's the same question about how do we know if a person is really an Adam Gadol? If a person just shows up and puts out an advertisement, I'm accepting people for audiences and I give out sgulis and all kinds of things, a person is an Adam Gadol if other known rabbanim respect him. That's the way you know. It's the same as finding out about a doctor. You want to know who's a good doctor? Go look. Don't go look and see, is he a good-looking fellow? Don't see, is he a nice man? Does he sound impressive? Find out what other doctors say about him, right? So here, the Rambam says like this. This is at the end of the parak. Not everybody who comes and performs miracles, even miracles didn't convince us. The Jewish people didn't go for that. Person comes and started doing miracles, you needed a lot more substance in order to be accepted. Just one moment. Ella, he says, a person that we know from the beginning that he's royal in Nevuah, meaning generally when a Navi appeared on the scene, it was a person who they'd already been waiting for it to come, right? The Chachamim of the area were saying, this person's going to be getting it within the next year. It's a person who we already knew. That he's royally nevuah, that he has the chachma required, that he has the ma'aser required, that he has really been rising and growing above everybody else around him, and following this program that we discussed before of kedusha, of precious, then he comes and says it was a natural culmination of something that we'd already seen in process for a while.
Yeah.
Mamish, the same as with a god lador. You never have a god lador who just shows up out of the blue. This is a person who's already been respected as a Talmud Chacham for years and growing through the ranks. Question.
What is the connection for not being Christian? You like you're saying, if you need to know what to do, what you want, you'll say, well, you need to speak my friend. The common with the Zohar Tumkin was also doing the same thing. Somebody had a question of
Not really. The Urim V'Tumim was used for very specifically for the king to consult about national problems. That's all.
when it kind of goes to he's seeing what's coming out of the room too.
That's right. There was something that had national significance, but it didn't work that way. The Yochid couldn't come to the Navi and ask to consult with the Urim V'Tumim. If Hashem decided to send a message, fine, but that wasn't the process. The process was that the Urim V'Tumim could only be consulted with by a king for national affairs. Yes, if we got a specific sign that happened, but the process was you went to a Navi for these things.
So we only know them once their fate is when they study on the windows who they are.
That's right.
So you just like asking somebody who's not like a Yahweh was like, no, he sat and learning. It wasn't an issue. He was learning like in his own
The
room.
public didn't know. The public didn't know. But the plenty of Talmidei Chachamim around him did know. Meaning there will always be, unless it's unusual to have a person who is in absolute seclusion during the years of his growth. He'll usually be involved with, he'll have a Rebbe, he'll have Chavrusis, he'll have Rav Elyashiv was known
So
from the early
what
times.
was I'm saying I can read on that, but
It's again quite unusual. But even the people who are known as people who sat off in their corner for years until they suddenly came into the limelight were known by the great people around him. The Chazon Ish was the same story. Chafetz Chaim and Reb Chaim Moisa were pushing him for a while to get out into the public, but he preferred to stay. Very unusual that a person mamash appears out of the blue. Doesn't usually work that way. Okay, so coming back to this, this really was an end in itself to bring out what Nevuah is about. But coming back to our discussion, so this was the environment of that area called Soifim. It wasn't that they had a Navi. It was an area that was characterized by Nevi'im. These were the Levi'im of B'nai Kahas. We know the Levi'im basically were the Shevet that were dedicated to spirituality. And that's why the rest of Klal Yisrael supported them. They were providing the spiritual core for Klal Yisrael. And here is the greatest of them. And yes, this was an area that just Nevi'im were all around in the streets. This was the environment that Shmuel was born into. And now, okay, now I have to move over to his mother and his father with only a few minutes left. So I guess we're going to have to continue this next week. But let's start now. So that's as far as the environment that Hashem plans for the appearance of this great neshama. Next, we have his father and we have his mother. So let's start with his father, specifically because his mother we actually know more about and will probably spend more time on. But let's paint a picture of his father also so that we don't miss that very important part of the picture. So we have Elkanah. What does the pasuk tell us about Elkanah? It says in very brief terms, but then Chazal paint a picture of what his life was about. There was a man whose name was Elkanah, right? Ben Yeruchim and Eliyahu ben Techo. Okay, fine. Two wives, Chana and Penina. Penina had children, Chana didn't have children. Now, here's really the word, the sentence that captures, if you were to read the biography of Elkanah, it's in Pasuk Gimel. The Allah Isha hu me'ira miyamim yamima, lishda chavois, lizbach Hashem tzvok. That half of Pasuk is basically the story of Elkanah's life. If you were to have the full biography, that would be it. So, Chazal described, let's start from the end. What was Elkanah's life's project? Elkanah's life's project was what I guess we'll call Kiruv Kroivim, to bring Hashem's children closer to him. What do we mean by that? What we mean by that was like this. In the time, in this period, toward the, like we said, toward the end of the Shoftim, there wasn't the Beis HaMikdash yet, right? What was there? There was a Mishkan. The Mishkan was in Shilo. At this point in time, the Mishkan had fallen into, call it, a state of disrepair, meaning it was there and functioning, that there wasn't much connection between Klal Yisrael and the Mishkan. Why? Because it was being abused by the people in charge. I'll just say that in a very simple way right now, something that also has to be discussed at more length. But it wasn't, the management of the Mishkan wasn't being handled right. It turned many people off. It caused a lot of Chilul Hashem, and people weren't coming to the Mishkan in general. Now, the truth is that having a Mishkan, having a Beis HaMikdash, is meant to be mamish, a heartbeat of the Jewish people. That point of the Aliyah, the Regel, 3 times a year is to come and be inspired by the experience of coming to the Mishkan or the Beis HaMikdash. And the way the Malbim puts it down is it's mamish functioning like a heart in a body. Meaning, how does a heart in the body work? The blood makes its way up to the heart. Dehydrated blood, right? This is so simple biology. Dehydrated blood, blue as in dehydrated, unhealthy blood cells make their way up to the heart. There, the heart injects them with all the oxygen they need. It brings them to life, right? And what does it do? It then expels them out to the furthest corners of the body, red, vibrant, carrying all that oxygen and ready to give life to the edges of the toes, right? Up to the brain, down to the edges of the toes, etc. So there's a constant circle. Come back to the heart, you go out of the heart rejuvenated, lose it, you come back, right? That's the pattern. Anyone with me on that? Very simply put, right? That's the process. So the Malbim says this was the process of the Beis HaMikdash in Klal Yisrael, the Mishkan in Klal Yisrael. It was the heart that provided the spiritual injection, the rejuvenation, the vitality. The people came at least 3 times a year, as we'll see soon. Consider it an ideal to come more than that. You came there, you became spiritually vitalized, you went back to the farthest corners of Eretz Yisrael, carrying that vitality with you. By the time it started running out, you are back for your next trip for the Aliyah the Regel, to get your next burst of Ruchnius. If you ask, well, we seem to be managing without that. What's the answer? Answer is we're not. Meaning we are lacking that vitality. As vibrant and as vital as Yiddishkeit is today, it doesn't compare with the levels of vitality and vibrance that it had when we were actually had that constant contact with the Mishkan. At this point in time, the people had lost that very great asset. Why? Because the Mishkan wasn't a popular place. It was people weren't attracted to go there. And there were reasons for that. But Lamaisa, what was happening was that there was an ongoing cooling of the spiritual vitality, of the fervor, of the enthusiasm, an ongoing cooling. People who came to the Aliyah and the Regel, the Mefarshim say, they came in kind of like a perfunctory kind of way. You came, you did what you needed to do, and you left. Not everybody did. Even that had reasons. There's a lot in the background here. In the time of Devaira, danger travel became dangerous. At that point, people had to stop going to the Mishkan because it was just too dangerous. Human nature is that, you know, once the danger is past, but people were already used to not going. It was hard to start relating to it as a chiyuv again. So between that and between the not very ideal situation in the Mishkan, people weren't really coming. Like we said, there were the real frum. We're going in a perfunctory way those 3 times a year. You know, just the man of the house would go, do it, be yotze, come back. And there was barely anybody who was going more than that. Elkanah was hurt by this. He was hurt by what he saw as this distance settling in between Klal Yisrael and Hashem, just because of the coolness that was resulting from the distance from the Mishkan. And it pained him. It pained him on two counts. Because of his Avas Yisrael, he was pained by the fact that they shouldn't have that wealth of a relationship with Hashem. And because of his Avas Hashem, it pained him that Hashem shouldn't have his children close to him. And therefore, he decided as a one-man person, as a one-man operation, that he was going to change it. Now, let's understand something. If people, and this is something Chazal stress, the person decides sometimes it's an easier endeavor to fix everybody, to fix the world, than to do a much more difficult project. That is to fix yourself. Right? So you run, you go decide, I'm going to identify the world's problems. Identifying my own is complicated and it's not pleasant, but I can easily identify the world's problems. Everybody out there is busy identifying the world's problems. I'm going to go improve society. What about myself? Let's not talk about that right now. To really impact the broader picture, and this is what Chazal described here, it starts with yourself. It continues with your home and your family. And then it continues with your neighborhood. Right? The impact grows. And from there, you can move on to the level of really impacting the bigger picture. It says, "V'ola he was an oile." It started with him growing to a level that his influence started pouring out over to his family. It says, the way Chazal put it is, "Ola, I forgot exactly the lotion, Ola ba'atzmai, Ola b'mishpachtoi, Ola b'iroi, and then Ola in all of Klal Yisrael." So after bringing himself as close to Hashem as possible, which he realized meant tapping into the treasures that the Beis HaMikdash, that the Mishkan provided. So he used to do that regularly. Despite the difficulties of it, he would go not just in the Shalosh Regalim, but he would go additional times throughout the year in order to gain the spiritual treasures, even in that less than ideal reality that you can get from being in that proximity to the Shekhinah, of being in the Mishkan's area. And then he took it to the next step. It was like we said before, even the people who were going, the man of the house would go by himself, be yotze, and come back home. But he was mechadish something, a whole family. Everyone's going together. Men, women, children, everyone's going together. And because he wanted his whole family to be impacted by that. But then he wanted to spread it further. And this was what became Elkanah's life project, to bring back the connection between the Bnei Yisrael and the Mishkan. How did he do this as a one-man operation? So he had B'nai Nahara, a large family, everybody together. Remember, they weren't in vans. If there was a whole family traveling, it was a scene. It was a commotion, right? So it was a whole matzav traveling. Each time he would go a different group. If they had to camp out on the way in some town, it was a commotion. It's a whole big family, Lebedika family. It wasn't such a common sight to see traveling together. People would ask, where are you going? What's going on? Then what would he do? He would take advantage and launch into a whole enthusiastic description of, yes, I'm taking my family to the Mishkan. Had such a nostalgic sound to it because it was something that people did in the past, but nobody does that anymore. But he would describe it in glowing detail, and he would move the people who heard him. He said, why don't you join? Every trip he made, there were a few people, a few more families who were inspired to join. And each time he would take a different route. And slowly but surely, more families joined, more families joined. That he actually affected a one-man revolution of reconnecting Bnei Yisrael to the Mishkan, which really means to Hashem. And therefore, Hashem told him, Hashem said, you brought my children back to me on a personal scale, on a one-man scale. Therefore, I'm going to give you a child who's going to bring Klal Yisrael close to me on the mass national level. So there, we touched on Elkanah. And Yitzhak Hashem, next week, we'll move on to the great sugya of Chana. Okay. Yutavach.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.